It is the CB Sports Network Rewind Show for you this morning here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. At KC Miners, Mason Nealon with you guys. Jeff out on vacation, so luckily for all your ears, you guys don't have to listen to Jeff this week. He's out on vacation, and I know he's going to come back and listen to this when he gets back from wherever he's at in Canada, because they've got no cell reception right now. But whenever he gets back, Mason, he's going to listen to this. We're going to get a text saying, oh, you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's completely off the grid in Canada somewhere. I have no clue. He texted me one last time before, you know, heading to Canada, and then probably not going to hear from him until he gets back. So.
Yeah, he'll be back on, I think Monday he'll be back in the office, but we are joined with Chris Cuellar from the Iowa High School Boys Athletic Association. And Chris, how you doing on this Tuesday morning?
Doing okay. How are you guys? Always good to chat in peril. I'm only, what is it, a week removed from my last trip, so doing okay.
Yeah, it was a busy state baseball season and everything like that. We'll start with that. You know, Chris, as we talked to you for a little bit, how did everything with state baseball go here in Carroll? I imagine it was a busy week.
Extremely well, as usual. Hopefully you guys got to spend as much time as you wanted out at the ballpark, and, you know, anybody listening got to make a trip down to Merchants Park. The games were competitive, the teams were excited to be there, and the community and the schools really made, you know, our tournament feel welcome. We've been in Carroll consistently since 2021 now, this time around, and it seems to get better every single year. Nothing but full praise from our office and our staff. We have a great experience every time, and we really love being there.
And so, Chris, you guys obviously have another site as well for the 3A, 4A stuff for baseball. You know, talk about, you know, not just only Carroll, but that other site as well, and kind of how you felt like everything went for this last week.
Well, really well in Cedar Rapids, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago at this point. So that 3A, 4A has just been a little bit more of a rotation due to site concerns everywhere we've gone. So, you know, like I said, we've been in Carroll since 21. In that time in 3A, 4A, we've been at Duane Banks in Iowa City. We were at Veterans Memorial Stadium in Cedar Rapids. Then we went 1 year last year in Sioux City, and we've had a great experience everywhere we've gone. It's just, you know, different than Carroll and different than the consistency. So we've had to plan accordingly. We were back in Cedar Rapids at Vets, and it is a great sized venue and, you know, a really excellent facility for that tournament with a grounds crew that takes care of the field really well, and they made a lot of upgrades since our last trip there. But, you know, their staff was kind of turned over in that amount of time from the last time we were there, so it was a new experience for them, and we had a new baseball administrator, so he stayed in Cedar Rapids as well. So positive experience all around, just certainly a different feel at a Class A minor league ballpark, you know, with suites and a concourse than what our 1A and 2A fans have grown to expect, you know, in Carroll.
Do you think it works better for the association when it's split up like that? Or, you know, I know because they used to do it at Principal Park in Des Moines for years, and then now, you know, I think since right after COVID or so, it's been split up, maybe even before COVID, it's been split up at the two sites. You know, does that think you work better for the association in a way, or does it kind of make it a little more work for you guys?
If you look at the schedule, anytime we've gotten any kind of precipitation at either site, that would be reason enough to let you know that one site does not seem like something that is going to happen in the anytime in the near future.
Yep.
So in Cedar Rapids, again, you know, with the split sites, we're only playing 14 games in each location. In Cedar Rapids, we had rain on Monday, and that meant we only got one game and half an inning in. So we had to play five games on Tuesday and then four on Wednesday. And as someone who was there, I'm not sure how we would have crammed any more in. So imagine if we were trying to do double the games and double the amount of teams in the exact same space and time. I think this is what is feasible. I understand people got used to what those 8 days at Principal Park looked like, but we don't currently have any – I want to say this as clear as possible – we don't have any ballparks, communities, facilities ready and willing to take on 7 to 10 days and 32 teams in a state baseball tournament right now. So this format has worked really well for us. the communities, both Carroll and the others, and, you know, now Cedar Rapids, obviously, for the next couple, you know, have really taken well to the tournament, and it seems to work very well.
You know, what was it about Carroll that brought the association here? Was it the history with state baseball being here? You know, kind of take us through that process, because you guys have been here, you know, for, you know, 3 or 4 years doing state baseball here. And it, I think the communities itself doesn't want it to leave anytime soon. But, you know, what was it going through that process to kind of bring state baseball back to Carroll?
Our executive director, Tom Keating, has been on staff since 2019, and he is a really big process guy. So what is the process that led us to a certain facility or a certain town or a certain way that we do the tournament? And when we were going to move state baseball after 2020, following that COVID season, we needed to figure out what, you know, we valued. And that was a facility that could put on a great show and a competitive surface for our teams, but also a good spectator experience for whoever was going to be visiting that. That was community support, whether that's helping run the venue or assisting with parking or hotels or, you know, Chamber of Commerce details. You know, then what schools locally, you know, would either have buy-in or, you know, be able to assist in some way so that when we show up at a site, we aren't, you know, having to parachute everybody in from our Boone office for a full 5 days, because that's just not realistic with what we do. So as we look at all those things, Carroll checked all those boxes and then some. And so we feel like it is an excellent facility. We feel like it is an excellent competitive surface. We do love the historic nature of the ballpark, but they also, you know, as you guys have detailed, you know, with news stories over the last few years, have done significant upgrades to the ballpark to modernize it and make it, you know, safer and an even better fan experience. We feel all those things as a group that just comes in and parachutes in for 5 days and runs a big tournament. So the community support is second to none among all of our sports and our locations. And so it's really been a really positive relationship.
Yeah, the dead week just wrapped up this last week there, Chris. And what's it been like? Because, you know, now you think of it, the school sports season officially wrapped up, even though we're getting into fall this week. You know, how did everything go at the association this year? You know, any changes we could see coming in the fall, you know, anything like that? Just kind of run us in review kind of how you felt the year went in general for you guys.
I think excellent. I'm a little too inside on this, where I was in charge of all of our broadcast efforts and the big change we made in terms of, you know, communication and how all of our broadcasts and streams took place so that we could better highlight our state tournament events and then even put on, you know, hopefully a better show at those state tournament events for our fans who came out. And I think we took leaps and bounds forward as an organization with those focuses. From a sport and organization standpoint, the stuff that we're getting asked about and the stuff that we're being asked to address here entering this fall are the concerns of our schools, and whether that's at a local level or a state perspective. And our schools, you know, now I think feel like we're in a good enough spot, both as an organization, but the way we're serving them and the way we're focused on doing well what we do, that it's time to turn the camera towards them and figure out, okay, how can we assist them with some of our processes? How are our rules or our resources benefiting them and meeting them where they are right now, whether that's, you know, public or non-public concerns? That's really where our focus has been, and I think that means that we're in a pretty good spot, both as an organization, but, you know, as a state athletic entity that's being asked to, you know, oversee these valuable events for our schools and our communities.
Chris, you guys get about, you know, 2 to 3 weeks off before, you know, volleyball, football, all that fun stuff kicks off for you guys here. You know, what does the dead time between the end of baseball and the start of the fall season look like for you guys over the association?
I want to be clear. I'm not off. I have not had a day off since the state baseball tournament. We're I'm wrapping up my internship program that rolls through the summer, so we've got a few big projects that are still underway. We've got staff members in here and working with the AD Association this week, and then we've got a big board meeting and board retreat coming up this week that a few of our administrators are headed to and preparing for. So it actually is a pretty busy time turning the page on what the school year was, tying up those loose ends. You know, even from a financial perspective, those business owners can know what it's like to have, you know, a full team of auditors come in your office to wrap out your year. And then all of a sudden, you know, starting yesterday, we're on to out of dead week and we're on to questions for, you know, the start of practices and the start of school. And that means all of our sport administrators are on call and, you know, trying to handle those concerns. So we do have to turn the page pretty quickly. And, you know, we're fortunate. Our schedule doesn't mean that we're out at a ball diamond every single night of the week, like a lot of our ADs and coaches. But we do have to handle our school concerns every day. So we are on to the next one, I promise. 26-27 is here, and, you know, week zero football teams are ready to roll. So it's go time.
Yeah, that week zero football game getting kicked off. I believe the 21st is that first week zero games. Yeah. For you, Chris. Any changes that we can expect in the fall, you know, from state stuff and even just in general with some of the rule changes and stuff like that that you know of that might concern some of the local listeners with the fall sports season right around the corner?
No major structural changes to report. The two biggest things that we're dealing with now this year were passed by the local legislature or by the state legislature last session. So one is the cash bill that high school sporting events in the regular season and then some of the postseason lead-ups are required to take cash. And, I can't speak for your entire, you know, listenership area, but, you know, a lot of schools and districts and conferences had made the switch to digital only over the last 5 years. So providing guidance on proper cash taking measures and then eventually once the postseason goes, reporting to us and the girls union has been quite a consideration, but fans for high school sporting events following that cash bill will be able to pay cash to enter again. And then the state legislature also passed a bill that updated eligibility, and that included making eighth graders eligible for high school sports as determined at the local level. And we are still dealing with that. We have emergency rules in place, and they were eligible as of August 1, but there's still another State Board of Education meeting to come next week. So stay tuned on that. But all of that is to say, our athletic association time has not been spent on any major changes that we have made, but instead, you know, kind of addressing those state legislature, state code concerns for our schools and our fans.
So we've had a couple local ADs on the show before, and they've talked about, you know, the changes with eighth graders now being eligible and stuff like that. And they said, you know, it's on the schools and it's on the coaches. How does that, you know, look on the association side of it? How do you guys handle, you know, the eighth graders? Is there anything new that you guys have to do and stuff like that?
Our job right now is to issue guidance for our schools, especially as, like I mentioned, not trying to punt on you, but there's a special State Board of Education meeting next week, mm-hmm. and they're going to set rules into place. So we're issuing guidance based on limited emergency rules that were passed, and some of that information may change if we were to have this conversation 8 days from now. So our job is to kind of just give the guidance that we can to our member schools and try to, you know, help them make the best decisions they can. But yes, you're right. A lot of it is up to local control and the schools determining, you know, if some of those eighth graders are ready for high school sports, whether that's varsity, junior varsity, freshman level activities, if they want to set up any eligibility standards, whether that's academics or behavior, for determining how those eighth graders would move up. And then, you know, figuring out what their timeline might be, because, you know, you can't take eighth grade twice now and try to get 6 years of high school eligibility. And you also can't play on a junior high team and a high school team. So that's a lot of decisions in a very short period of time for our coaches and our ADs.
And so with that as well, you know, was that something that you guys knew was coming as well and you guys got time to prepare for? Is this something that, you know, you guys are just kind of trying to work through the way that the ADs are working through it and kind of everyone as well?
Great question. The eighth grader provision was an add-on to the bill as it was previously written concerning calendar days and eligibility there. So to some extent, no, but we knew it had passed through committees and certain chambers. Our boss, Tom Keating, again, does an excellent job of updating our member schools on the legislative status of things that are going to affect them. And so we had been, you know, keeping our schools apprised of this since the spring. Now, what kind of rules can we write when we don't know exactly what the language is going to be or what the State Board of Education is going to determine? Because, again, that is not the Athletic Association. That is not the Girls Union. We are not government entities, but we are tasked with, you know, following up what has been laid down. So we draft what we can to try to help out, and then we kind of have to play it by ear, as you can imagine. So we're waiting with anticipation for next week to see what comes out of that State Board of Education meeting and to see, you know, what we need to update and tell our schools.
Again, Chris, I want to thank you for joining us today and taking your time. You know, anything that we're missing on that's going on big at the association that, you know, we haven't talked about yet?
No, I mean, you know, I just think the Athletic Association is in a really good spot, you know, in being terms of supporting our schools, our student athletes, you know, our championship events. And a lot of that is really down to places like Carroll who support these events, who proudly support their area high schools and their student athletes. And so, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on. I appreciate the hospitality that myself and my staff enjoyed, you know, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago. And, you know, it doesn't go unnoticed. And so it helps kind of reinforce how fortunate we are to get to work in this. Yeah, we work in sports in Iowa, and we get to support young student athletes, and that's a very cool thing, and we're just trying to do the best we can to make those experiences as good as we can for the kids.
Again, Chris, I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to talk with us this morning.
You got it. Thanks, guys. We'll be in touch soon.
Again, that was Chris Cuellar with the Iowa High School Boys Athletic Association on the phone with us this morning. We've got another interview as we got another guest waiting to come in and join us as well about a sharing agreement between two schools in our local area. We'll talk about that next coming up on KCIM Sports Rewind.
It's almost here. FFA Fun Days in Glidden, sponsored by the Glidden-Ralston FFA alumni and the City of Glidden. Join them Thursday, August 6th through Saturday, August 8th for 3 days of hometown fun with carnival rides, a penny dive at the pool, greased pig contest, cow pie bingo, parade, tractor ride, auto and motorcycle show, kids games and a street dance, and so much more. Don't miss free kids games and rides every single day. For a full list of events and times, follow Glidden FFA Fun Day on Facebook.
Since 1968, Mackey Motors has been serving Lake City and the surrounding communities with new and certified pre-owned vehicles. Mackey Motors is a full-service dealership providing oil changes in our Quick Lube Express bays, a service department with world-class trained technicians, a body shop and collision center with the latest equipment, a full vehicle detailing department, or come talk with one of our highly knowledgeable sales staff.
Recipient of the GM Mark of Excellence Award for 16 years running. Together, let's drive at Mackey Motors in Lake City. MackeyMotors.com.
This is from Joshua Jackson, actor and FAIR Volunteer Ambassador.
Food allergy is a serious, life-threatening disease that impacts over 33 million Americans. When your immune system sees certain food proteins as a threat, every bite matters. But here's the good news. There have been advancements in the treatment of food allergies, and with one voice, we can create better awareness. Because in the FAIR community, the disease doesn't own us. We own our journey. Talk to an allergist to understand your options. Visit foodallergy.org/empower to learn more.
As a parent, you said you'd never give up the convertible.
Look, the van even has its own backing.
You said you'd never schedule your life around a stuffed animal.
Nobody panic. Bun Bun is still at daycare.
And never put them in harm's way.
I'll be right back, little man. Just gonna pop in the store for diapers.
But never happens. Temperatures as low as 60 degrees can be deadly for children left behind. So always bring them with you every time you park the car. Stop, look, lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We are back with the CB Sports Network Rewind Show for you this morning here on a 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. Casey Miners, Mason Nealon again with you guys, and we are on the phone with the Sean Burks, the athletic director for Audubon and Exira. Well, Audubon Community School District down there in Audubon. But Sean, we got you this morning because you guys just now agreed to share some more sports with Exira, Elkhorn, Kimbleton, with numbers getting low on both sides for everybody. Sean, how you doing this morning?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we just talked to you a couple weeks ago about the eighth grader thing and everything like that, and now we got you this morning. I know that you guys just approved that new sharing agreement a couple of days ago, I believe. Kind of walk us through that and, what you guys will be now sharing, as you already shared girls, but this is more on the boys' side.
Yeah, in the past we've been sharing for 3 years now, softball and girls' basketball. Those are primarily us reaching out to them, seeking some assistance. Our girls' numbers have been pretty low. We're continuing those. We're going to add track to that on the girls' side as well. We did that 2 years ago, tried to go on our own. We both had pretty mediocre numbers and decided we might as well do it. We've got the track. We can stay 1A. So adding girls' track back into that, and then it became kind of a Exira HK was looking at their boys' numbers and noticing that dip there. They've been coming to us for junior high football for a few years. It's not a football redistricting chance, and if they would join us for football, it would bump us to A. So that's a big conversation to have down the road. But for right now, for this year, it looks like we'll be comfortably in 1A for basketball, both genders of track, both genders of basketball, and both summer sports. That was kind of the biggest thing now. So when their board took action in July, they were going to add boys basketball, both boys and girls track and baseball to the existing agreement. We already have things in place for wrestling for both genders, girls basketball, tennis, junior high football, both genders across country, and softball. So really the newest aspect is adding boys basketball, both tracks, and boys baseball. We took action. We had a community meeting and then took action and had some good conversations in our community about what the hosting looks like and what's being played where and levels and everything that went with it. And we felt like we had a pretty good support from our community, and our board passed it 5-0 after their board passed it 7-0.
And Sean, I know that, in past years you hear, rumblings of, some people not liking the sharing, some people liking it. Was there any much of that this time around when you kind of looked at the boys' side?
Yeah, I think the primary concern from our end, the Audubon community, is, we're definitely going to need three levels of a schedule. And with it being the first year of the Rolling Valley, are we going to be able to find enough levels that 25-plus kids out for basketball are going to get meaningful playing time? So that's the conversation. I think we're going to find enough of the JV varsity dates for sure and girl-boy dates for sure. It's just a matter of can we find enough third-level games now for those. We call it JVR. Some people call it freshmen, but it's primarily your freshmen and some of your sophomores. That third level, because, getting 25 kids in on a night is tough if you only have two levels. So that's probably the primary concern. And then just some questions on what games are going to be played in what towns, what those look like. But, the bonus of it is that our girls have only played one or two games at home most years the last 3 years. And now we're going to present to our communities that we can have four girl-boy doubleheaders in both communities at a minimum. And then the last one or two home dates might be a JV varsity girls in Elkhorn or a JV varsity boys in Audubon. Or maybe we get another non-conference or two that are girl-boy doubleheaders we split between each town. But it gives our kids in both towns a chance to see what their future can be. Where right now our youth girls only had maybe one chance a year to see our varsity girls play. And when you stop seeing those, in your hallways and in your gyms, it stops happening. And girls don't know what that looks like. So we want that chance for our girls. And now we don't want to take that opportunity away from their boys either. So we're trying to put things in both towns as often as we can when it works. And those girl-boy doubleheaders allow for us to play JV in the other gym. We can play a 4:30 freshman game if numbers allow. When Ikeem Manning comes to town, for example, we can use both gyms. We could play a 4:30 freshman boys game, and then at 6 o'clock have a JV boys game and a varsity girls game opposite gyms, and then flip at 7:30, and the varsity boys take over and the JV girls take over. So
Hopefully we can have some of those manga nights and get some big crowds back, and we can do that in both communities, whether it's in Elkhorn or in Audubon for home dates, and we can do that when we go on the road as well for people that have two gyms.
Sean, do you feel like it made the transition a little better that, you know, you guys were already sharing the softballs and the girls' basketballs and wrestling and all that stuff?
Yes and no. You know, I think, you know, we've proven that it's been a successful merger. We're not guaranteeing that we're going to get to every regional final like we have in softball and basketball. We just had some really good teams lately. It's not a guarantee that that's going to keep happening, but it shows that, you know, when the kids come together and our coaches come together, it's gone really well. But I think some of the hesitation from some people in our community, and I'm guessing in the other community as well, is that, you know, we don't want to just keep sharing everything all the time and become one combined school and one combined district and all that stuff. And that's not what we want. This is short term. You know, our boys are a 3-year agreement, girls are a 4-year agreement. But we also have both, you know, we're working on the language that if a school needs to back out before that, what that looks like, so we don't have, you know, some hard feelings and some heartburn from the decision, so to speak. So I think we've got to be careful that we're not, you know, overly sharing and sharing too much, because we understand that when you put you take some things out of towns and take some things out of facilities, that's not what we want to do. We really only want to share when we have to and when it's the best for our kids. And our long-term goal is to get programs back in both communities and both be on our own and be competing against each other in the Rolling Valley Conference for years to come. But there's also, it's worked really well, so that if, you know, there's some programs that never want to go back on their own, or tennis, for example, they've never had tennis, so they're just going to keep coming here. And wrestling doesn't look like that they have any desire to go back on their own either. There's some of those sports that I think will stay together for long term. As far as the big ones of the winter sports and the summer sports with basketball, baseball, softball, and we'd like to both get those back on our own when numbers allow, but have the opportunity to help each other if needed.
So, Sean, I know that you guys have been sharing softball for the last couple of years now, and you mentioned the girls are on a 4-year agreement. Was that approved at the meeting, too, or is that a separate thing that you guys are thinking about coming up this next year, or is that kind of done after this year?
So girls basketball approved a 4-year agreement going forward already this winter. When basketball was up, it was time to kind of evaluate basketball, and we decided they wanted to, it just looks like our numbers, you know, our 8th grade girls are our biggest group. We're not sure what the numbers ahead of them or behind them will look like. We anticipate only sending about 3 total high school girls to Elkhorn this year, and we don't want to, you know, make those 8th graders as freshmen a year from now take over a program as freshmen. That's a bold move, and we don't want to do that wrong. So we talked about 4 years, where when those girls are maybe juniors and the numbers behind them allow for it, that timing seems right. And then having everything on the same timeline, so that if softball and basketball want to remove at the same time, it makes sense. And boys, we haven't been doing it, and we wanted to make sure it lined up with the next football cycle when that point comes. And we really didn't want to do 1 year. So your number had to be 1, 3, or 5. 5 seemed too long. 1 seems too short. So 3 was the right number for boys. But like I said, all of them with our memorandum of understanding, or MOU, is, you know, the language in their states that, you know, if you need, it's roughly a year out if you need to let a school know what's going on. So that, you know, if you get to the end of basketball season, you're like, hey, we looked and I think we're good to go for next year. We wanted that decision coming, you know, at the very latest following the season prior, but preferably a year or two down the road, so both schools can be making plans for scheduling and for coaching and everything else that goes with that, because it's a big decision. You don't want to do that wrong, and you don't want to hurt feelings. So our hope is that, you know, we can both fulfill the 3- and 4-year agreements, and at that point in time down the road, you would see if that's the right time to start phasing back out or not.
So, Sean, obviously this starts coming up in the winter here, so, you know, not a huge turnaround for you guys, but what does it take now to get ready for this sharing agreement, now that, you know, kind of the paperwork is there and the finalization is there?
Yeah, the big one, the first big one is basketball. Tom and I, Tom Peterson, the AD at Exire HK, we met on Sunday. So for people to realize how, you know, we had the board meetings last week, and then Tom and I sat down on Sunday, the last day of dead week, and just pulled up both of our schedules. We'd shared them with each other prior and looked, and we feel really good that our basketball schedule is going to merge really well. The non-conference we both had scheduled, the dates we had each other scheduled, you know, allow for some different openings. I think as of right now, we feel pretty solid about all 21 boys' dates and about 20 of the girls' dates, with hosting split relatively equal between them. We'll get together with our committee and present that. We'll get together with, you know, send some emails out to our officials and our other schools. But I think we can maintain about every agreement we had in place with both schools. Our home and away set up really, really well where we don't have to cancel a whole lot of events. So we're excited about that. We'll let the conference schools know that they're going to have two byes when they play one of us. And we'll go from there. And then summer-wise, kind of the same thing of we'll try to keep as much as we have with our existing schedule and then start reaching out, scheduling some of the non-conference where basketball kind of already had those scheduled. You're hoping not to have to cancel them and rearrange them. Baseball and softball, we kind of waited to schedule our non-conference. Number one, we didn't schedule many baseball non-conference because we were down to 15 kids this year, and we just with a full Rolling Valley schedule, we didn't have a lot. Now that we feel we're going to have a full two levels, if not three levels, now we can both get busy scheduling, you know, some of the JVR stuff for the 11 a.m. games, start finding some more JV varsity opponents, reach out to some of the former WIC opponents, for example. I think it'd be really good for our baseball and softball to try to play Riverside and Logan Magnolia and Avoca and some of those schools that we've been playing for years. So that legwork starts now.
And Sean, I know that you were just talking about basketball a little bit. Are you still, is the plan now that both schools are sharing boys and girls to have the doubleheaders more often, or are we still going to see like boys on one night and girls on another night, kind of like it was when they were separate?
No, the plan is to play one school schedule and just and make the non-conference merge. And as of right now, I think we have, you know, don't hold me to it, we haven't formally committed to it. But as of right now, I think we have 19 girl-boy doubleheaders and two JV varsity girl or boy dates. So that's exciting, you know, where we can each host about four to five doubleheaders, and we can each host one or two JV varsity dates. We can each get five or six games in Elkhorn and five or six games in Audubon, with the vast majority of those being girl-boy doubleheaders. And then, like I said, for those of us in the conference that have two gyms, IKEA Manning, Audubon, Woodbine, There's several of them in the conference that have two gyms. You know, when you play each other on those nights, you can play JV varsity Mongo nights, as we refer to them, where the main gym has your varsity contest, your second gym has your JV contest, and then you flip. So like when we would do it in Audubon, we would have a 6 o'clock main gym would be varsity girls followed by varsity boys, and then the secondary gym would be JV boys followed by JV girls. So you can get four games in at that time. And then also we would try to have a 4:30 freshman game before that, or JVR game, whatever you want to call your level as well.
And Sean, another question for you here. I know that, you know, during the softball season, the girls wore both Audubon and Exira Elkhorn Kimbleton jerseys and everything like that. And I know, you know, for the communities, it's a big deal to see that, not just for the kids to represent their community, but also, you know, and everything like that. Is it going to be the same thing we kind of saw in softball where both teams will have multiple jerseys, or does Exira have basketball, you guys, you know, have something else? You know, how's that going to look?
As of right now, the way it's written, the schools that are the host are the mascot in uniform you're typically going to use. However, when we have to have two or three levels in different uniforms, sometimes rather than buy new ones, it makes sense to mix them in. And softball, the situation is that way as well because they play four or five games a week. You know, the laundry turnaround and everything else, they really need multiple sets of JVs and varsity. So that's kind of why they've kind of used the combo. But as of right now, you know, we will be the basketball, boys basketball host. They'll be the girls basketball host. So on a given night, the typical thing you'd see would be Spartan girls and Wheeler boys for that. And the baseball and softball would be the same where you'd have Spartan girls and Wheeler boys. But like I said, that it depends on what uniform inventories come out. You know, if we need to purchase something, that was depending on which school needs to purchase it, or if we split the cost, or which boosters it has it, or if we can use an existing uniform set so we don't have to buy more. Those are some of the headaches and some of the things that come with it. It's another reminder of why we need as much time as we do between the decision to share it and getting that season rolling, because there's a lot of things that come into play.
And Sean, for you as an AD, you know, what's next for you? Obviously, you got football coming up, and then you've got this sharing agreement. You've got the move to the Rolling Valley Conference. So, you know, how do you kind of manage all of this stuff that's kind of moving simultaneously?
That's the love and the hate of the AD position. There's a lot of short-term fires you're dealing with of trying to put out, and you know, on a given day in the fall, you know, you're trying to make sure you've got volleyball officials and concessions workers and ticket takers but you're also sending off an email to trying to finalize a softball opponent and an umpire situation. You know, you're dealing with legislation that affects you now and down the road and everything else. So that's all, that's always part of it. I think that's some of the fun with this position is, you know, you're dealing with the now and the urgent stuff, but you're also dealing with things down the road. And, you know, it's no different than teaching and being an administrator too. There's some things that you have to prioritize and some things that need to be pushed down the road a little bit. And it's always kind of a juggling act. And it's why at night I can't turn my brain off and go to sleep very easily because there's a million things running through my head a little bit. And it's just the way it goes. But it's also part of the things that I love. You know, there's a reason I'm involved in school-based athletics and education and teaching and leadership. You know, those are fun things. And when you see the things come together, it really gives you a sense of gratification. You know, seeing our girls make it to state in softball and the amount of support and donations that rolled in from both communities and looking at the amount of people that traveled to Fort Dodge, or you go back to last winter when the girls made the state basketball, you know, the huge support that goes there. And you go right on down the list of the things that we've shared and it's gone really well and how the communities come together. But then also there's things we're doing on our own at the same time, and both communities can take great pride in the things that are still happening without the shared sports. You know, volleyball, both programs will have over 20 girls out and have their own programs and compete against each other. That'll be an interesting dynamic as well.
And Sean, another question for you here. Do you think that the softball, with the success they've seen in the basketball, the success they've seen especially on the girls' side, kind of played in a little bit to maybe the boy sharing regardless of the low numbers?
Yeah, I think, you know, they've part of the thing that I talked about in the community meeting was how gracious Xavier HK took our girls in 3 years ago for basketball. You know, we contributed one starter at the time, one kind of bench role player at the time, and bumped Xavier HK to 2A. So, I mean, that was not something that they had to do. They had the majority of the players. They had the majority of the numbers. You know, they were in 1A and would have been really competitive as well. So understanding it's a give and a take. It's, as I explained at the meeting, that the term is cooperative sharing, and those two words defined, you know, think about what it means to be cooperative and what it means to share. It's a two-way street, and they've helped us out, and we've talked, as our board has talked many times, of we want to be ready to extend our hand out and to be ready to take them in when they need help, and hopefully they will return that reciprocity, and they have. So when they reached out and said they might have 4 to 5 boys going out for high school basketball, and they might have, you know, 5 or 6 boys out for baseball next summer, they don't know, but those are just general numbers off the top of my head. And I don't have my spreadsheet in front of me where it makes sense for us. We can stay in 1A. We can have 3 full levels where our younger kids can play at the level they need to be at. Our JV kids can play JV games. Our top end kids can play varsity. The opportunity that we can be leveled, we can schedule those games. Also goes in the fact that we can help them out as well. So there's a lot of reasons to do it. There's certainly question marks and concerns on what, you know, we're not going to play as many games in Audubon, or we're going to have our kids on buses, or people have to travel further to watch some home games. We get those, and those are valid concerns, but we felt that the positives outweighed the negatives. And like we have seen in the past, it's gone really well, and we think there's, you know, a reason for optimism that will go well for more on the boys' side this time.
Sean, we want to thank you for joining us. I know you've been a busy guy today, and especially with football coming up, so we'll let you go, and want to thank you for talking with us about the cheering.
You bet. Appreciate you reaching out. Have a good one.
All right, Sean, we'll see you during football season.
That was Sean Burks with the Audubon Wheelers, the athletic director down there. Again, they are sharing with Xyra Elkhorn Kimbleton coming up with boys sports this coming season. And not really for football or volleyball. It's going to start kind of in the winter time and stuff like that. And Mason, I think it's a great thing to just see two communities, you know, that are struggling with numbers come together, especially the success that they've seen on the girls' side.
Yeah, and I just give props to Sean for, you know, being able to navigate that. You know, kind of like I asked him, you know, they had to deal with the 8th grader stuff, moving to the Rolling Valley Conference, still wrapping up the softball season, figuring out the sharing agreement. So, you know, props to them and both communities, honestly, for being able to, you know, get this done and kind of look past, you know, the we want to be our separate entities and kind of just say, well, this is going to be better for both of us. And, you know, news to me, though, about, you know, it's only a short-term thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know if they had a number on it, if it was just a we're going to share until we don't need to share anymore. But, you know, then now that I know that there's a number on it, it's kind of like, okay, this is a, you know, just get us back on our feet, get some more people out into the sports, and then we can kind of move our separate ways to be able to play each other in the Rolling Valley Conference.
Yeah, and who knows? After the 3 years, they could be they could do it for longer because, you know, Audubon might be down low on numbers. Exira might be down low on numbers again, and that could be another thing that they share again for years to come. We'll step away. We'll take a break. We'll talk about some more sports when we come back. You're listening to the CB Sports Network Rewind Show this morning on KCIM.
This fall, step into something extraordinary. Roundkick Gym's fall registration is August 11th and 25th. Muay Thai kickboxing classes for kids, teens, and adults teach confidence, discipline, respect, and championship mindset. Registration is 11:30 to 6. Reserve your spot now at roundkickgym.com.
As a professional in your field, have you ever wanted to give back to your community? CTE stands for Career and Technical Education. Career and Technical Educators are professionals who teach the next generation of students going into these fields. CTEs are important because they help shape the future workforce. CTE not only benefits the student learning the program, but the teacher who teaches it.
CTE has impacted me personally because, one, I'm a product of CTE. I was a student in these classes when I was in high school. But also, as a teacher, I get to build these relationships with students. And it's not just subject matter. It's a potential career. It's a potential passion. And you get to work with students and see them going on to careers in this field. I get to work with students in the most unique setting, a setting that's technical, creative, and hands-on. And I think when you bring teachers and students together like that, you get to see a different side of their potential. There is nothing more exciting than that.
If this seems like something you'd be interested in, go to acteonline.org and search for Teach CTE.
Did you know most opioid addictions begin with a prescription? Using opioids longer than directed can increase the risk of dependence. Talk openly with your primary care provider about pain management options, side effects, and alternatives. Dispose of unused medications safely at drop-off sites like pharmacies and the sheriff's department. Don't keep them just in case. Prevent misuse before it starts. Opioid awareness begins with informed choices and responsible use. This message is brought to you by the Carroll County Opioid Settlement Fund Committee, committed to opioid awareness and prevention in our community.
We welcome you back to 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. It's the CB Sports Network Rewind Show for you here on this Tuesday morning. Casey Miners, Mason Nealon with you in the studio as we are getting set for the fall sports season. Mason, you and Jeff going to sit down with all the area volleyball and coaches shows for the preview shows coming up in a couple of weeks. But hard to believe, Friday, we are in full swing of the fall sports season already.
Yeah, Kemper heads to Atlantic at 9 in the morning for girls tennis on Friday, and then Monday you turn around and Carroll has their, I believe, first ever girls tennis.
Yep.
They'll have Shenandoah at the Shenandoah Quad at 11, and Red Elk will travel down to Audubon at 10 o'clock. So that all comes before our next rewind cycle here. But, you know, it's weird to say that, you know, it just wrapped up baseball, and now I'm like, we're right back into the fall coming up on Friday. So it'll be fun to get into the fall. I'm excited to see, you know, all of the different things. I'm excited as well to see cross country and tennis kind of move its way up north into Carroll as well.
Yeah, you guys mentioned that Carroll High this year going to have tennis and cross country on its own. Their girls tennis team getting underway on Monday. Kemper girls tennis on Friday. Charlotte Schwabe comes back. She was a really big contributor to their team a year ago. I believe made state, if I'm correct. Did she place at state? I can't remember or not.
I believe she placed in the, was it top five?
I can't remember what she placed, but I know she made state. She comes back coming off a terrific softball season. I think they expect some big things out of her there, you know, on the courts for the Knights.
Yeah, she's obviously got to be probably your number one. I mean, last year only lost a handful of matches going into the state tournament. But yeah, what a stellar athlete to be able to go from, you know, tennis to softball and have those two phenomenal years. But for sure. And then you got to figure out, you know, some of the other girls, because I know they've lost some seniors. They're probably going to lose some numbers back to Carroll, obviously. So you're going to have to figure out, you know, what comes behind Charlotte and what you want for, you know, for her in doubles and what you want for, you know, your two through six.
I know that we're going to be sitting down with a lot of the volleyball and football coaches coming up in the next couple of weeks for those preview shows and everything like that. They'll be able to give us more on kind of their numbers and schedules and how they think stuff plays out. But what are you looking forward to? We'll start with football, especially coming up on Friday, because we're already 2 weeks away from the week zero game where we've got Kuhn and Arweva both playing that week.
I'm ready, honestly. You know, the second year of these districts, you kind of figure out who's who and what everyone's going to have, because you look last year and you're like, well, if this guy's a junior or sophomore, they're back next year. And I think the two big factors, you know, for this area are going to be Kemper and Audubon. You know, you're going to look at two teams that made the Dome last year. Kemper lost a lot, but still return one of the best offensive lines in 2A, one of the best running backs in 2A, and then Audubon returns almost everything. You know, you're going to have a couple of hits here and there from seniors, but then, you know, you've got some ones like Carroll, Coon Rapids, Baird, you know, some of those other schools that may sneak in there, you know, South Central Calhoun as well, that might sneak in there and, you know, provide some really good football games for us.
Yeah, and I'm excited for football season. I am every single year just because I think the football in our area is going to be really good this year with Audubon. You know, Carroll, Coon, you think of SEC. ESAC brings back quite a bit from last year. You know, Glidden, Arweva, and Coon and Audubon all in the same district, and all of them are close right together, so you never know who's going to come out on top of there. But Audubon and Kemper, especially the two teams that went to the Dome last year. Kemper wrapped up a state title last year. I think for them there's a lot of buzz that they could get back there as well this season. And volleyball coming up as well. Kemper was a state volleyball team a year ago. Carroll right around 500, but they move into a different conference this year. Audubon, IKEA Manning was a good team last year. Coon was a good team last year. Kind of what are you looking forward to this volleyball season?
Specifically just the Rolling Valley Conference. I mean, you're going to have 7 of the 10 teams in this area in the Rolling Valley Conference. So, I think, you know, we're going to have 3 conferences between the Twin Lakes, the Hawkeye 10, and the Rolling Valley Conference. So, you know, it should be a lot of especially in the Rolling Valley Conference, should be a really tight race to the top, you know, with Molly having another year at Audubon. You know, we're going to see kind of that take shape. We're going to see IKM Manning move into that conference. You know, those teams are battle-tested through the WIC. And then, you know, the one thing that I'm going to see, too, is, you know, Coon Rapids Bear. You lose a lot off of that team. You know, Aubrey Hoffauer, Anna Hart, Malia Clayburgh, obviously the three big ones. You know, now it's kind of that question mark of what's next for them. You know, what are they going to bring up? I know Natalie's going to have the girls ready to go by the time.
And I think bringing back Amelia Cook at the setter really helps you because you've got a girl that's been a starter for 2 years now and has been won a lot of games, you know, has sets the ball really well. Having her in the middle of that leadership aspect and stuff like that, I think is going to be huge to get some of those younger girls up to speed and everything like that. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just wanted to throw my 2 cents in. But
yeah, no, you're good. I think for her, though, you put a lot of pressure on her shoulders, honestly, because she's got to take that next step that, you know, Anna and Malia and Aubrey had of being the leaders of that team and kind of being the vocal leaders of that team. So, you know, that's something that really will push her, I'm assuming. And, you know, talking to her a couple of times, she's pretty competitive, so I think that will push her in the right direction. But, you know, even some of the other schools, you know, Peyton Sherdan took a step forward last year and was really good, and I think Nikki's doing some great stuff over there. So, you know, to see that again this year and see maybe, you know, because they didn't lose anything off of that team, they might take a step forward as well. And, you know, Arweva, you know, getting everyone healthy, ready to go for this next season, they may take a step forward. But yeah, I think that we should have some really good volleyball, but I think that specifically the Rolling Valley Conference should be very competitive.
When we got 7 teams in the Rolling Valley, 7 of the, is it 8?
I think 7 of the 10.
Is it 10 teams in the Rolling Valley now? 7 of the 10 teams are some of our local schools, so we're going to get a lot of Rolling Valley action for you guys this year. So if you're a Rolling Valley fan, stay tuned for the volleyball season. I think Kemper, they're coming into the season. My question for them is, what's it going to look like without Elsa, Kaylee, and Brianna? Those three girls meant so much to that team the last 3 years. I think they've got the hitters to be competitive. You know, you've got to find a setter. Sounds like the Lorman girl's really good. And then back row play, you know, where does Keys slide in? Where do some of the other girls play? So I think Kemper's got some holes to fill, but they should still be right back where they want to be, you know, in Iowa City come the end of the year.
Yeah, and I like what Rusty did last year, you know, sliding some of the Mia Milligans, the Sophie Lormans in during some of those games, because they were really dominant in some of those games, winning, you know, just 3-0 in different sets. So you got to really, you know, look at that and say, you know, those girls have some time. I know Sophie played a little bit at the state tournament as well when they got down there, and Mia did as well. But yeah, I mean, you lose Brianna Witchrock, who's a college volleyball player, Elsa Tiefenthaler, who's a college volleyball player, and Kaylee Simons, who's a college volleyball player. So it's like, you know, what do you do now? But Kemper's had this, how many different times have they had this predicament of, we've lost such a great group of college volleyball players, what's next? And then you find
a freshman,
know,
or
you find some kid out there that, you know, nobody really talked about that steps in and is just good. But I think, you know, like you said, you know, with Colby Peter, Mariah Houghton, you know, Addie Antover coming back, you're gonna have the hitters to be competitive, especially with Lewis Central and Red Oak and Clarinda all leaving the Hawkeye 10. So it will be fun. I think the other thing about that, it's gonna be fun to actually have a Carroll Kemper
volleyball
sanctioned volleyball match in town here.
Yeah, and I think that's what everybody's really looking forward to this year is that Caroline Kemper meeting back on the hardwood, especially for volleyball. It's going to mean something even more. Not that they didn't mean something before, but it's going to mean something even more now for conference standings and everything like that. We are getting set to round out your KCIM Sports Rewind for this week. Again, mentioned that we've got the fall sports season getting kicked off on Friday. Check out those full sports schedules up at sports.1380kcim.com. If you want to get caught up on what happened with state baseball, or you can check out a podcast of it in just moments. We talked with Chris Quaylar this morning from the Iowa Boys Association, as well as Sean Burks there and Larry Ottobins. They're sharing with Xyra Elkhorn Gibbleton. You can check out a podcast of all of what we heard today and what we talked about today up onto the Carroll Broadcasting website in just moments.
Western Iowa's news and classic hit station is 1380 AM, 95.1 FM, KCIM Carroll, broadcasting from